Top Shelf Sports Talk. You're hanging out in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
Yeah, we're going to talk Bills Jags with 13 Wham Sports, BuffaloPlus.com's Dan Fates, but I can't let this slide. Let's just get this out of the way up front. I mean, Dan Fates is good with his time. He's a busy man. He's about to be a girl dad times three. You call him up and you, misfit over there.
Misfit, I just
condescendingly
asked him.
How is my Braves fan friend doing? Is my Braves fan friend doing okay today? This guy is giving us our time, and you're being condescending to him like he's a child because he's a fan of the Gwinnett Stripers here late in the season. Dan, I want to apologize on behalf of this misfit across from me, and thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to getting your insight on this great Monday night matchup between the Bills and the Jags.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Danger. I just didn't expect anything less, from a Mets fan. That's all. That's just kind of what I was expecting. I'm a broken man. I'm sure Gene has been reveling in my tweets. I am no longer watching this team for the rest of the season, the Braves, that is. I can no longer support and put myself through the mental anguish, and mental health is very important nowadays. I can't watch teams hit leadoff doubles, leadoff triples, and not score runs. So I feel better. I checked the scores at the end of the night, and congrats to the Mets on making the playoffs.
Wow. Wow. Thank you, Dan. It'll be a game and a half, so I feel like I'm walking into a trap here. It's a bizarre world.
Nope. It's all you, man.
All right.
Congrats. Our whole team being decimated, but you got there.
Dan, yesterday, Sean McDermott, I know he can't really say anything but what he said, but man, we were laughing. We thought this was one of the greatest lies ever told by a head coach, the idea that they still have the utmost confidence in Tyler Bass. You have to say that. You can't not say that. But man, seeing how that ball came off his foot last Thursday night in Miami, probably good that they're being proactive, working out some kickers this week, just in case Tyler Bass isn't able to do what he's being asked to do.
Yeah, I think this is the first time that there's really been pressure. And I know there's always pressure from fans and outside and social media and all those things. But from the start, when the pressure started or the heat felt like it was turned up on Bass and his production and play, Bean and McDermott were always like, hey, I know he missed the kick, but like, he's a hard worker guy. Like, everything's going to be fine. He works at his craft. We have all the faith in him. And there really was never a flinch. Like, anything like that. But the fact that they worked out two kickers earlier this week was the first real sign of, okay, we got problems and that we need to have our ducks in a row in case things get worse. And then Sean is in mid-season form this week with his cliches. He is locked and loaded. He has full confidence in Tyler Bass. And he also has a ton of respect for a very good Jacksonville Jaguars team.
Dan Fates, 13 Wham, Buffalo Plus. Dan, if I have one fear about this Monday night, and yes, the guys stepping in have been great, right? Who thought Cam Lewis could play at this level? Jamarcus Ingram, now Baylen Spector. And if you take away that first drive, he was great too. But it's a cumulative effect here. I mean, these guys, at what point do we begin to see, all right, these guys were a backup for some reason?
I don't know. That's a really good question. DeMar Hamlin, Baylen Spector, Terrell Bernard, Dorian Williams, Cam Lewis, like the list goes on. Chris Long was talking about it on his Greenlight podcast earlier this week. He kind of recapped week two. Is there a better coach than Sean McDermott at getting the most out of the bottom and backups of his roster? I mean, look around the NFL. Like, teams fall off a cliff sometimes when they lose one player. The Bills are without their best three players on defense. And Sean McDermott still has that defense instilling fear. They have this, we talked to Rasul Douglas about it yesterday, guys. Kind of interesting how Vaughn says it's a simple defense, but it's also complex. And you can tell that the Bills, especially their back half, are confusing quarterbacks and doing a really good job of disguising things. But Rasul says, like, the way that we keep it simple is so that, like, we can play fast. And I know that's another cliche, but like when you're not thinking about like doing nine different things, you just go out there and play. It's the same thing when a wide receiver feels more comfortable running routes. They can run them crisper and better because they're on the same page with the quarterback and all those things. So they kept Baylen Specter around for a few years when he's been battling some soft tissue injuries. And you kind of wonder like, oh, they'll move on from Baylen Specter. And here's their time of actually doing it. And this is why they kept him around. You hope that Terrell Bernard's back sooner rather than later. That seems to be the good news of the strain of the bicep. But, guys, they just continue to plug guys in, fill holes. They say the next man up mentality, and they go out there and still play at a very high level. And I know people maybe don't want to hear it, but it's a lot because of Sean McDermott and Bobby Babbitt.
Yeah, I also think that it's just, and we talked about this with Sal Capaccio yesterday, that there's a continuity with the Buffalo Bills, that, and they have an advantage over teams that bring in personnel but then change defensive coordinators. And the Jags are one of those teams dealing with a new defensive coordinator this year. How much are they changing their scheme, and how much is that new scheme know, equal what they already have as far as personnel on the defensive or offensive side of the ball? And the Bills, let's face it, aren't going to change their defensive philosophy.
Right.
It's Sean McDermott's defense. He knows the guys he wants, and he's got guys now that have been here for 3, 4, or more years that understand exactly where they need to be and how they need to play.
Yeah, and going off that, too, you know, talking to one of the players yesterday and said, like, these coaches spend time and watch film one-on-one with backups, and that's very rare. Like, to have the time and the not the just in case, but guys like Cam Lewis, guys like DeMar Hamlin, guys like Dorian Williams. Like, normally it's the starters go through the film room, they go through all that, they break, it's over. But this coaching staff takes extra time and watches film exclusively and one-on-one with backups. So Cam Lewis has gotten the starter treatment in the film room. Guys like Baylen Specter, guys like Terrell Bernard, like those guys that weren't necessarily starters at one point, got the treatment of starters for when they got their call. And, like, that shows you the importance that Sean McDermott puts on that of, like, preparing. And it is interesting to me to be, like, when Baylen Specter came in the huddle, and I'm like, man, this is bad. I saw Terrell Bernard walk off the field. He walked right past me, muttered some things. I was like, this doesn't seem good. And Baylen Specter comes in the huddle, and the first play gets a tackle. And, like, I'm sure Baylen Specter, and they can all say, like, the backup quarterback, you're only one play away. But to really be able to do that is a whole nother level of being prepared. Because it's easy to say, oh, yeah, you're always preparing like you're going to start. But you're expecting Terrell Bernard to play 100% of the defensive snaps. And when you get in there to then make the first play, I think shows a lot about the preparation and the coaching staff puts in with these guys and then them executing. It's not all them. They deserve a lot of the credit, the coaching staff, and the players executing when their opportunity is called.
Dan Fates, 13 Wham, Buffalo Plus is our guest. The history between these two teams, Bills and Jacksonville. Dan's not great. I mean,
not great, Bob.
No, like, right. You get the game in London. You got the Urban Meyer game. If you want to go back to the 10-3 scintillating playoff loss, why is that?
Man, you are always flying high. You're a Mets fan. You're feeling good. You got great questions. Like, you are just killing it, Gene. Like, that's what it is. Because Mike and I, we joke around a lot on Buffalo Plus, and some people say, there's too many inside jokes that you guys have. One of the ongoing running jokes that Mike and I have constantly had is that we still think the Bills are going to come back and win that game against Urban Meyer down in Jacksonville. like we are convinced that they're going to come back and win that game. I think it's a little bit of taking teams lightly. And the Bills have kind of a trend of that case. We go back to last year. They lost 6 games in the regular season, guys. 5 of those were to teams that missed the playoffs and were struggling when they faced the Bills.
Wow.
Go back to Denver beating the Bills on that weird Monday night game. They've lost to the Patriots. They've lost to the Jets a couple times. Like, they've lost two bad teams. Then they go and they get up for the big games against the Chiefs and all those things. But this is, you know, Sean McDermott was asked about that, and that was where he pulled out all the cliches of, we don't take anybody lightly. We don't think this is a trend in all those things. But it's hard not to see the little bit of the trend of 5 out of your 6 losses were to bad teams last year. Now, I give a credit to Von Miller, who, I don't know if you guys know this, he's in his 14th year in the league because he never brings that up. But he's in his 14th year. And I thought one of the best things I heard yesterday was him going, it's 2 weeks, right? The Bills were cast off this offseason as their championship window is closed, they're going to stink, they're going to miss the playoffs. They've won two games in convincing fashion for the most part. I know the Arizona game they had to hang on a little bit, but they pretty much took control of that game in the second half. The last six quarters, they have been dominant in every facet of the game. And now all of a sudden they're like, those are a top five team. And Vaughn talked about it's how they, the biggest test they have right now is handling this success. Is you're only as good as your last game and things like that. But this was a team that kind of liked being the underdog, I think, the first 2 weeks. And we don't really know what the Bills are. Now they're going to face a Jacksonville team that their quarterback said it himself. They suck right now. And that's a dangerous team that comes in 0-2. Trendy spot for underdogs, a desperate team coming to Buffalo. And it's how do the Bills handle that success? I think the good thing is that they've had a lot of time off. I think that's a lot of time for the Bills and the coaching staff to find negative things that they didn't do well in Miami and hammer those points home rather than give them their flowers and say, hey, we're a great 2-0 team. Don't worry about it. But they have had a history of kind of taking these bad teams a little lightly the last 2 years.
Yeah, and then double that with their opponent the following week. I mean, it could be a look-ahead spot too, Uncle Dan, when you consider that Baltimore is on the horizon as well once they get through with Jacksonville here. So let me ask you a question. Is 5.5 enough points for Jacksonville to cover?
Yeah. Yeah, I originally was looking at this game and I thought 27-10 Bills. I thought easy, the Jacksonville team, I think they've got a lot of issues in their secondary. They have a good front four, a good pass rush, but I think their secondary is weak. We saw Tua and them expose that in week one. And then you really can't take any semblance of what the passing game is for the Cleveland Browns and Deshaun Watson. So I think there will be opportunities there. But this is one of those spots where now the Bills have had a lot. Now you're getting more film on teams, right? We always talk week one. Well, we can look back to last year, but what do they really have and how are they going to change during the offseason and coordinators? And then you have Trevor Lawrence. Like, we talked to the Jags broadcast, the play-by-play guy, and he's like, that's not like Trevor Lawrence to come out there and say, like, we suck and that I need to play better, the running backs need to play better, the wide receivers need to – like, he went down the list. Like, they're going to be a desperate team coming in on Monday night with something to prove. So it's a little scary for me. I think this game goes 24-20 is kind of what I'm predicting on the Buffalo Plus show today. 5.5 seems like a lot. Josh hasn't been a great guy to cover when he's had 5 or more points favorite. Just some of the trends, he's like 8-17-1 I was just looking at today. So, look, now when the Bills win, they do have that trend of winning a lot of their games by 6-plus points. If you're a fan of the Bills and that's something you want, that's fine. But an 0-2 team facing a 2-0 team, underdogs have been trendy. I think this is going to be a closer game than what we think because that's kind of the history of what this Bills team has been like the last few years.
Dan Fates, 13 Wham, Buffalo Plus, our guest. Dan, I mean, another thing, I'm thinking of storylines maybe after this game. Might we be saying nice things about Brandon Bean? Because I go back to the Miami game and, hey, here's Jordan Poyer. And, ooh, that did not look good. And that wasn't – now I'm – it's not like Gabe Davis we're pining over, but maybe Mitch Morse in a way when they let him go. I said to myself, like, boy, of all the guys, that's the one that hurts. But then
But then
you see what the offensive line did against Miami. Your thoughts on, you know, what these veterans – it's been kind of a tour because then – well, then a couple weeks after that, we're going to see Diggs down in Houston.
Yeah. They talked about how weird it was to see Jordan Poyer last week. I believe Poyer just kind of ran right off the field after the game, but that James Cook touchdown was not a good look for Jordan Poyer. Mike and I joked on our post-game recap down in Miami that you thought James Cook looked really fast, and then you were like, Jordan Poyer maybe just looked a little slow. And we'll have to see what Gabe is. He leads the team in targets for Jacksonville. He's got 10 targets. He has 6 catches. That's kind of his MO. He catches about half the passes that are thrown in his direction. Trevor Lawrence hasn't looked good. Things like that. Mitch Morse is, you know, what he meant to this team, I think, was more than what Gabe is. It is funny. Jen and I were just talking back in the sports office. Gabe was a captain last year. Like I guess I kind of forgot about that. Like, he was a leader on this team. He did have some memorable games. But the consistency wasn't there. All of those things. But I think Mitch Morse was viewed as, you know, he was dad. He was the dad of the team. And I think that is something maybe that they will remember more. Josh talked about it yesterday that, you know, he sees both of them as family. And he goes, I hope they view me the same way. But I think it is nicer now that they're not on the same side of the field. They're not going against each other. But it's 2 weeks into the season. I'm not going to overreact one way or another. Poyer didn't look great. Gabe has looked like Gabe. And I think the Jags offensive line has got to figure some things out. So I'm not going to overreact yet to what the Bills did. But right now, Bean looks pretty smart getting rid of guys maybe a year too early than necessarily a year too late.
We've been on with you for over 10 minutes, and we haven't mentioned the Bills' offense really once. I mean, we're kind of spoiled here. You talk about what James Cook was able to do against Miami last week, Dan.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about what this Bills' offense needs to do against Jacksonville's defense. You mentioned that Miami was able to exploit it late in their week one win. And you know, just by looking through 2 weeks of action here, if Miami was able to come back against Jacksonville and the Bills were able to decimate Miami, it would stand to reason that the Bills shouldn't have much of a problem with Jacksonville's defense. And by the way, is Khalil Shakir going to go the entire season without a drop? I think everything that goes in sticks to that guy.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. Kind of reinventing what the modern-day NFL wide receiver is with his intelligence. Sean McDermott talks about calling him just a football player. He goes, don't have him run a 40, don't have him do a vertical jump, just the fact that he's a football player. As for this offense, Josh Allen has attempted the second fewest passes in the entire league. I asked him about that yesterday. For a team that has pretty much been Josh Allen-centric, they haven't been this through two games. And I know it's just two games, but they did have to come back against Arizona, and they still didn't abandon the run. Their offensive line has been good in running for run blocking. I mean, the holes that James Cook had, he wasn't touched until 4 or 5 yards down the field. This will be their biggest test with the Jaguars' front four. They are very good. And to neutralize that, I expect there to be a lot of quick passes, quick screens, things like that, meaning I like Dalton Kincaid's over this week. I like Khalil Shakir's over this week. They have to find some way of getting defenses to respect a downfield passing attack. I asked Josh, is it weird the fact that you've attempted only 42 passes in 2 weeks? And he kind of like laughed and smiled and was like, well, the way that James is running the ball, it's not weird. It's nice. And then that's where I give Joe Brady a lot of credit. I was very high on him when they went to him being full-time last year and obviously the full offseason. He's got something that I really appreciate that it's, I want to ask him, like, you coordinators, I remember Leslie Frazier a few years ago, like, wrote down on his wristband, like, don't blitz Patrick Mahomes. And, like, the mindset and the mentality you have to have. Joe Brady has the discipline to not try and outthink too much and overthink things. The Bills ran the ball well, and he just keeps hitting the button of, oh, you're not going to stop it? Perfect, we'll do it again. Oh, you didn't stop it again? We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again until you prove us that we can stop it. And a guy like that, I like Mike McDaniel, he's abandoned things. And it's like he overthinks, like, okay, well, now I did that, so now I can do this. Joe Brady, it's like he has KISS written on his wristband. Like, keep it simple, stupid. Like, don't mess with what is working. And what's working right now is James Cook and this offensive line. On his 40-yard run, they triple-teamed the defensive lineman for the Dolphins, pancaking him. Awesome play through and through. Like, all of that stuff. And I just appreciate the fact that Joe Brady hasn't fallen in love with, hey, I got 17 back there. Now I'm going to let it loose. It's, no, let's keep running the ball. They can't stop it. We're going to keep running it. And again, I think McDermott, I think Brady were a little bit ahead of the curve that we've seen around the NFL. There's only been 5 300-yard passing games through 2 weeks. All of those teams, none of those teams have covered or in those games. Defenses are adjusting. There's more running the ball. Sean talked about it. Josh talked about it. Defenses are getting smaller to deal with the speed of offenses, which is allowing the running backs to find more lanes and kind of play bully ball, which is what the Bills did against the Dolphins. I expect to see more of that while adding in a quick passing game, some screens to neutralize the Jaguars' pass rush.
Dan, last one for me, and it's actually a two-part question because are you changing your platform? And I'm going to paraphrase your take here. Like, why run the ball? And just as a throwing lead, or like so this is the NFL in 2024. So I imagine are you altering that take? And then what did you think of the Mel Kiper Jr. take today, saying that the two high safeties they should outlaw? Like this is the NBA from the 1990s that we're going to call legal defense here in the NFL.
First, my take, it's always been, I don't like running the ball if it's not effective. I don't like running the ball for the sake of running the ball so that you can run it into a brick wall and go, cool, on first down, now it's second and nine. I think that's a waste. The Bills have been very effective at running it. I'm not against an effective running game. The Bills just haven't had that the last 2 years, so I feel like it's been a waste to take the ball out of Josh Allen's hands. This year feels different through 2 weeks, and going back to last year with Brady's MO, that they have been successful and productive running the ball. So I'm okay with that. As for Mel Kiper, horrible take. I tweeted it out too, like joking around, like, I guess the MLB should ban pitchers from throwing the ball 100 miles per hour. The NBA should limit the amount of three-pointers a team can take. And the fact that the NHL should make Connor McDavid play with his eyes closed. Like, if you want to neutralize the game, like, take away what teams do, like, that's crazy. Like, I appreciated the shifting, and I understand eliminating the shift in baseball to increase offense. That's fine. But the fact of there are teams, Arizona, other teams, like, scoring, some teams are having no problem scoring. And it's the fact of, can Josh Allen be disciplined enough to beat the cover two and the two high shell safeties? Hey, guess what? The Bills run the cover two high, the two shell safeties, second most in the league, guys. The Bills are doing it really well. Like, that, this is where the NFL is going. And now they swing back. And that's another credit to Sean McDermott, the fact that you had Poyer and Hyde back when it was a lot of one safety high, right? Micah controlled sideline to sideline. Poyer was in the box, more of a tackler covering the mid-range. Those guys leave, and you're like, well, how is so-and-so going to fill Hyde's role? Well, they haven't asked them to do Hyde. They have split the field in half. So you're not asking those guys to do something that Poyer and Hyde did. You're asking them to play their strengths. DeMar and Taylor Rapp, just play half the field. We're not going to ask you to be Poyer and Hyde. You guys take half the field, and we'll cover everything underneath. It's a bad take by Kiper to adjust the game planning of what teams do when it's like offenses have to adjust. And we've seen that. It just may not be as flashy. I am struggling to find overs to bet, but I don't think that this is a bad product by any means. Teams have to adjust.
Dan, speaking of the safeties, quickly, you mentioned Rapp, you mentioned Hamlin. The Bills are 2-0. We saw Cole Bishop come in late in garbage time against Miami. Mm-hmm. What do you think is it going to? What is it going to take for the rookie to get on the field, short of an injury? We don't wish an injury. We don't want an injury. But is that really the only pathway for a Mike Edwards or a Cole Bishop to get some time on the field this season?
I think so, because I think both safeties have been fine. And I know I've talked about it on this program with you guys. The fact that originally I was like, you can't let Poyer and Hyde go. The safeties are so important in Sean McDermott's defense. They're built from the back to the front instead of front to the back. But Sean has been so good with safeties. And I always talk about this. Hyde was a really good player in Green Bay. They should have never let him go, Green Bay, that is. But Poyer, they turned into an all-pro. Like, he was a cast-off by a lot of teams in Philly and in Cleveland. Like, Sean McDermott knows how to coach up safeties. He's coaching to their strengths. These two guys know the system better than Edwards and the rookie right now and Bishop. So unless there's some massive letdown by DeMar or Rapp, I don't see this changing. And I also don't see Micah getting a phone call anytime soon for that matter either.
Dan Fates, 13-win Buffalo Plus. What can we check out on those platforms coming up as we get ready for Bills Jags, Dan?
We got our Thursday live show on the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel, 7:15. We'll answer your questions. It's pretty much now turned into our live podcast for the week. So if you don't tune into it, we'll take your comments. But if you don't, it'll be reposted Friday morning, 7 a.m. on the YouTube channel, as well as up wherever you get your podcast at 5 a.m. So if you're waking up tomorrow, you got something going on tonight, you're putting the kids to bed, you missed the show, we will have it up there tomorrow. Preview the game, all those good things and more.
Great work, Dan. Enjoy Monday night. Let's talk again soon.
Go Braves. Kind of.
Go Gwinnett.
Go Gwinnett. They're up 12-3.
Okay, good. All right.
Against Cincinnati. I'm not ready to do a victory lap. See, that's a trap when he's saying he's congratulating me. The lead will be a game and a half. And the Mets are playing the Phillies. So this is the new and improved me, Mike Danger.
It's a trap.
Danger today in his office. You know, this isn't good for the show.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. Nobody cares when you're right. We only want to tell you when you're wrong. We say it all the time. I want to get a sign instead of play like champions today, like they have at Notre Dame in the sports bar. Our sign says no one cares when you're right.
So, like, if the Mets made the World Series, that's not good for the show. No. That's what you're saying?
No, not good for the show.
No,
it's a trap.
You bring joy and happiness to all the local Mets fans.
Okay. Because that's what we want. That's what's good. Joy and happiness. No, we want to tell you you're wrong. We want to tell you you suck. That's what we want to do. And it's nice that Dan, it's nice that you recognize what Dan was doing. I recognize it as well.
It's a trap.
He's just licking his chops, man. He's licking his chops that after a four-game series with the Phillies, that this is actually a race again and that the Mets aren't going to clinch anything.
It's a trap.
We'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out here over the course of the next few days, right? I mean, this weekend we'll have a good sense by the time we get to Monday. We'll take a break and come back. Mia O'Brien, 1010XL in Jacksonville, will be stopping by to give us the latest from the Jags. That's coming up here at about 4:25. We have time for your calls as well at 866-4326. It's been far too long since I've done this, but today I broke a seal. I did something that I haven't done in months. I had an Apple, and I'm ready to unveil the 2024 Apple Power Rankings.
Are we talking like apples, like Macintosh versus Sweet Tango? Or are we talking Apple Crisp, Apple Pie?
No,
I guess we'll have to wait.
The variety of apples.
Oh, okay.
The variety of apples. I've got my top three ready to go. We'll get to that and more next. Mia O'Brien joining us in about a half an hour or so. And again, your call's at 866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.